Welcome to the MS Dev Show, episode number 85. This week, we talk with Brian Munzenmeyer about Pattern Lab. Be valuable to your industry, not your employer. And Cortana achieves omnipresence. This episode of the MS Dev Show is brought to you by Infragistics. Their developer toolkits provide world-class controls targeting Windows, Web, iOS, Android, Xamarin Forms, and more. Whether you're an individual developer or part of an enterprise team, they have something for you. Check out the latest today at infragistics.com. This week we have Brian Munzenmeyer. Brian spends his working days in UX UI design at Roydan Enterprises and waking nights moonlighting as Crunchy Owl, a small single-man studio. He contributes to open source projects, maintaining the Node port of Brad Frost and Dave Olson's Pattern Lab, and is interested in the intersection of performance and responsive design to craft better things that reach more people. When not online, he's enjoying coffee of all qualities, digging up the yard, wearing an Afghan, talking about something he heard on public radio, dressing in grayscale, or pretending to play the piano. Dressing in grayscale, you got to tell me about that one, Brian.
Oh, well, I guess
please expand.
Just really stems probably from my purchasing decisions over time.
Oh, this isn't like a Halloween costume. This is like a style.
This is just kind of what I wear, I guess. My wife will be the first one to admit that my color palette is probably limited when it comes to what I wear every day. So the closet's just full of gray sweater upon gray sweater upon gray sweatshirt.
It's not a bad idea. Look at this. I'm wearing gray right now. So gray pullover.
So a long time ago, my wife forbid me from getting any more black t-shirts or blue dress shirts. So I understand that.
Yeah, I try to stay away from blue, but every once in a while, you got to have some flair, I guess.
I think I'm also wearing blue at this time as well. Anyway, this is let's get past this. Anything going on with you, Carl?
I have just been getting done with a whole series of talks on Continuum and Adaptive UI. So that has actually been really fun.
I've had a chance to talk to a lot of people. Where have you actually been traveling?
So we had a couple of talks in Chicago, Indianapolis, Minnesota, and actually tomorrow is my last day in Milwaukee.
Okay.
Wow.
Very cool. Very cool. Okay. Well, let's get into feedback. What did we have? And I'll let you say the name because I don't know how to pronounce his name.
and I'll probably get it wrong too, but this was a feedback on our site. So just as a reminder, you can hit the comment sections, our discuss links at the bottom of the site. And this week, Andreas Vonquist, said, "Hey guys, great episode. He got his band while on location for Build last year, and he was in the audience for Ollie's presentation." So I think that's really cool. He even puts a link to his Twitter post where he has a picture of Ollie on stage.
Yeah, he actually took a picture. Yeah, that's really cool.
One of the things he wanted to say, though, is the band for him, after over 170 workouts, is starting to fall apart. He hopes that the band 2 will be better. And he was wondering if Ollie could get him a new band 2 courtesy of Microsoft. He'll promise to give some excellent feedback.
Good luck with that. But I had a tip for him. Go ahead, Carl.
Well, I was just going to say, I've noticed I had the original band as well, and I think I'm going to steal your tip here, Jason. If you just bring it back to a Microsoft store, physical store, they won't ask you any questions. They'll just exchange it for you on site.
Yeah, I made that suggestion in the comments like you mentioned there. And what I would say is, like, there is no device that I could put on my wrist that is not going to get destroyed. Like, I even, you know, just the other day, the band that I'm wearing, I rammed it into the wall, like, inadvertently. I don't know. I'm not necessarily a clumsy person. Like, I don't fall a lot, but I tend to just, like, run into things. And, I have a tractor, and sometimes I'll, like, be, you know, I'll put an implement on there, like my plow or something like that. And I tend to just smash things on my wrist. So I guess another tip that I have, too, is to always get whatever the warranty is. So if it's the band, too, you can get that complete protection. Although, you know, I guess showing how good the Microsoft support is, I had that on my band and they didn't even care. I took it to the store and I said, "Hey, I've smashed this thing. I've destroyed the screen. I've destroyed pretty much every aspect of it." And I said, oh, and I have a warranty. And I'm like, oh, okay, whatever. They're like, here you go. We'll exchange it for you. So just like no questions asked. They didn't even look up the warranty information. So it was just amazing customer service. I mean, they just trust the customers, and that was just an awesome experience. So even if you don't have the Microsoft band, if you have a different brand, if you have the Apple Watch, or if you have the Android Wear, if there's some kind of warranty on it, I recommend it, because it's not like it's safe in your pocket. These things are exposed and they're going to run into whatever you run into.
Yep. And for the comment on our website, Andreas wins the ultimate license from Infragistics. And if you want to get mentioned on the show and be entered to win, you can email us at feedback@msdevshow.com. You can mention us on Twitter, Facebook, iTunes. We really like those 5-star iTunes reviews.
Yep. And this week, what I'd like to do, I'd like to get a certain type of feedback. So we're going to be looking for a certain type of feedback. We'll probably do something like this for a couple episodes here. But what I specifically want feedback on this week, and this could be simple. I mean, if you're the only one who says anything about this, guess what? You're going to win that Infragistics license. So this can really put the odds in your favor. But all you need to do, sorry for the screaming in the background. Somebody's really, you know, it's our fans in the background. They're just, just going crazy right now. So here's what I want. I want to know, what you think of the balance of the show. So if you want more news, less news, more of the guest, less of the guest, however you want to do that. If you want the feedback section to be shorter, let me know. Just any feedback on the balance. If you think it's just right, just say, you can even just send us a tweet saying the balance is perfect. And that's good enough. And we will be looking at your feedback, and using that for the next show. Okay. What do we got for news?
So this first thing is not a piece of news, but I found out the existence of certain devices and it just blew my mind. So there are flash drives out there that on one side are regular USB-A connections, mm-hmm. and on the other side are USB-C connections. So you can plug them directly into either like a Mac that has that or on the new Windows phones.
Yeah, I looked at this. At first I was thinking like it was like a light flash, and then I looked, I'm like, what the heck is this thing?
Yeah,
this is pretty wild, but it's exactly the shared memory, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you can, this is a stupid question, but you can like store something with one of the connectors and read it off the other, right?
I would assume so.
I hope so. Yeah. But that's pretty neat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Somebody had asked me if it was actually functioned as a pass-through connection as well. And I said, well, I don't know, but the pins are there. So
yeah, I have a feeling you don't want to hook up like both ends at the same time, right?
Good luck trying. Yeah.
Okay. But this is cool. Since not all the connectors are the same. Pretty cool. Okay. And then this next one, I don't know how you pronounce this. Is it
Tyobi?
Tyobi. Oh, that's how you pronounce it. Okay. So this is for language popularity, and I don't recall exactly how they rate this. I don't know if it really matters, but
but they've done this for a long time. So yeah. they are kind of a standard, even though, you may not agree with how it's measured. They're doing it consistently. So you can see the changes. And I thought there was like two really things that surprised me, this time, which is kind of why I brought it up. So, just as a recap, Tyobi has an index of all the programming languages, and every month they kind of update it and show how they've changed, mm-hmm. By popularity. And the first thing that I thought was kind of amazing is in the last month, Java has gone up by 6% to overtake C as the most popular language.
Yeah. What the heck is going on there?
I don't know.
How do you account for that? Is that can't be Android.
Yeah. And they have it kind of, broken apart pie shape. So it says Java is 20% of the full popularity. And that's by far bigger than anything else. So I just thought it was kind of amazing. I didn't realize that Java was that popular.
Yeah. And Objective-C has fallen by more than 7%, by more than Java has increased.
Which I think was the other key thing, was Objective-C is just going down, which is kind of, nobody wants to use it.
Well, actually, Swift is ahead of it now. Yeah. Wow. That's crazy. So Objective-C was in third place a year ago, and now it's down to 15th place.
Yes.
Swift. And Swift has just been steadily moving up, because Swift is actually palatable. I mean, Objective-C is, well, I'm not going to say anything. I think we all know. And Swift is interesting. I've been playing around with that. I just, I like learning new things, and I've been playing with it, and it's interesting. It's just C# like enough that it's not completely foreign, like trying to learn Objective-C. It's got some interesting things in there that, you know, I think there's just a lot of lessons from other languages that they put in there that are kind of interesting, especially around like error handling and, whether, you know, nullable types and things like that. And we're not going to get in this episode, but, it's been interesting. Any other observations on here?
No, those are the two key ones that I wanted to pull out.
Yeah. If you look historically, Java was like steadily falling, and now it's like, it's gone way up since like mid 2015 or so. That's very interesting. Okay. Well, anyway, we got lots of news here. What else we got? Cortana, now available everywhere.
Yeah. So I have a little secret. I've had Cortana on my iPhone for a while, mm-hmm. and I was part of the test flight for that. And it works really well. Obviously, there's certain OS integrations that it doesn't have. But it has all the Cloud Sync ones. So on my Windows 10 PC, I can say, you know, remind me to call my wife at, you know, 6 o'clock about blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And at 6 o'clock on my phone on iOS, it shows up. It gives me that reminder. So,
oh, you get the notification?
Yeah. And, very, you know, cool. That's when, you know, it's nice having that sync across as well. So mm-hmm. I think that's the biggest thing that I get.
Yeah. Cause she's the cloud baby. And then it's also on Android now, which is sort of the big news. And on Android, I don't even know if I should say it. The Hey You feature is actually possible in the Android app if you're in the app or if you're on the Android home screen. On iOS, I don't think that feature works anywhere. Maybe if you have the app open, it works. I haven't tried that. So on the iOS version, you can just hit the microphone. So Android, you know, obviously lets you integrate Cortana a little bit more deeply into the OS. But like you said, this thing is cloud back. So you go in there, like mine tracks my packages and, you know, I get it on Windows. It is nice having it everywhere. It's just kind of a dashboard as to, you know, some things that are going on in the world every time I check it. This next one I tweeted this and it kind of blew up. A lot of people were interested in this, but it's choosing an HTTP status code. Stop making it hard. So
this was an excellent article, by the way.
Yeah, this is cool. I want to read the whole thing. It's
I mean, just the fact that he used a lot of flowcharts with pretty simple decisions, like this actually makes it easy. And actually, just to show you how easy it is, if you scroll down to the bottom, he says, no, it's pay no mind to RFC 2616 or even worse, 2068. The RFC you're looking for is 7231. So like just the act of getting to the right RFC is a pain. And then going to the RFC, I mean, the thing's like 500 pages long. No, thank you. I won't be reading that anytime soon.
Yeah.
But this is like super easily digestible.
I'd say I know that at Roydan we've struggled with this in building RESTful APIs. You know, do we want to shove everything in a 200? Even if there's something we handle that we'd consider an application error, or do we want to embark upon the journey of actually returning correct status codes or whatever? Yeah. So very neat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's got kind of a high level here. Is there a problem with the request? Is the problem server side? Am I implementing a web server? And then it kind of tells you like where, you know, what family of responses to get into. And then some of them are pretty funny too. So like for the 400 errors, does the resource even exist? If no, are you rage quitting the internet? No, 404 not found. Yes, 410 gone. it's just hilarious. I mean, it kind of points out the absurdity of some of these codes. If there's a 404 plus a 410
and of course are
gone.
And of course there's my favorite HTTP status code. I will recite it in the form of a limerick. I wanted a beverage hot from an HTTP coffee bot. My coffee was spurned and error returned. 418, I'm a teapot.
Good
so
job, Chris.
418 is I'm a teapot, and that has always been my favorite one.
Oh, this is hilarious. Yeah, so it says one of the questions here, is it April 1st? If yes, 418, I'm a teapot. So I wonder if I'm sure people implement that. That's why.
Yeah, I think that started off as a Twitter April Fool's joke.
Okay.
And then it got rolled up into the RFC. Nice.
Very cool. Very cool. Okay. Let's see here. What else do we got? Oh, this next one. So this was this is actually ancient. So this isn't even new. So I'm totally cheating here. But this was actually from October 26, 2013. So I was actually reading some comments on something and somebody had mentioned working for your industry and not your employer. And I thought that was a really interesting concept. And he said that that was all from James Whitaker. And James Whitaker, he's sort of famous for a couple of things. And one of them was he worked at Microsoft for years. He left to go to Google. I think he worked there about 18 months. And you know, he's like, these people are crazy. I'm going back to Microsoft. So he's got, you know, he's got an article out there talking about why he left Microsoft or why he left Google to go back to Microsoft. But anyway, this particular article again was talking about this whole idea. You know, he read an article that was talking about Jack Welch's advice, and it was all about, you know, like making your boss happy and working hard and blah, 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 blah. And James just, I love him because he always goes against the status quo. He just rips that apart and he's like, no, this could not be any more wrong. And I did take some quotes out of this that I think sort of embody what he was trying to say here. You must always remain valuable no matter what happens to your company. And I think that that's huge. Like, it doesn't matter where you're working at. Like, if you like put yourself in a position where you're going to go down with the ship and like that's your entire identity, then well, guess what? You're going to go down with the ship. And then the next one here, careers are no longer something we have. Careers are something we must own. So just thinking more broad about your career. And again, I think it's powerful advice saying make yourself, valuable to the industry, because automatically you're going to make yourself important to your employer. I mean, you know, if you're like Brian and you are like the greatest at, you know, responsive design, you know, like everybody is going to want to hire you, not just the place that you're at. And your current employer, they just happen to be the lucky one that's able to, you know, hang on to you at the current time. But, you know, from your own standpoint, you need to be thinking wider and bigger than that. So any thoughts, guys?
I've always had, you know, a little one-liner that I've kind of given to a lot of people. And I think that falls in line with this. And that's don't let your career happen around you.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of people, you know, they let their managers kind of dictate, you know, what kind of skills that they learn and, you know, the pace that they learn them and all sorts of other things. And if you do that, you might not like where you end up.
Yeah. And James says, he basically, he says it much more eloquently than I do, but he says that your manager is not very important, which, you know, I guess is debatable. It depends who your manager is. I happen to have
you were my manager, Jason. So
yeah. Yeah. And see, it didn't matter. It absolutely didn't matter. No, so James is awesome, and he's part of the same, I don't know what you'd call it, sub organization in Microsoft that I'm part of. So I was trying to find this article, so I actually reached out to him, and then, we got to talking, and, he's been in the list to invite on the show forever. And, he's like the number one person that I want to get on the show. And he's like, oh yeah, totally. I'll come on. And I really don't care what he talks about. We're going to figure out what he's going to talk about. So we're going to have him on at some point, which will be really cool. I'm really interested to hear what he says. Any comments on that article, Brian?
Yeah. I like the quotes in general and what Carl said, invoking Steve Jobs. You know, I think he said that you have to live your own life. Otherwise you end up living somebody else's. And, it's probably important for the industry, you know, your career in addition to your life. And, you know, you never know what's going to happen at your current employer, and always trying to better yourself and invest that extra time into other things is very, very important. It's evident to me in some of the things and the steps that I've gone through, mm-hmm. You know, paying dividends by doing things extracurricular and, you know, juxtaposing that to, you know, people who might just be more 9-to-5ers and
right. Yeah,
you're right. Other people have said it more eloquently, but, there's definitely value there.
Yeah. And it's not that you don't, you know, you're not giving it your all for the company that you're at, but I just kind of feel this way. Like, and fortunately I'm in a position where I can do this, you know, be able to think bigger picture. I always try to figure out like what are my boss's deliverables and how can I help him with that? But then also thinking industry wide, and it really always has helped me at my current job and it's worked very well.
Yeah.
Well, so just food for thought. Go ahead, Brian.
I'd agree. You know, my current boss, whose name is also Jason, is curiously enough. He I think he kind of embraces or gets this too, you know, being, allowing me to do this kind of thing and speak and just kind of focus on other UX stuff is really cool, because it ultimately benefits them as well, you know, and mm-hmm. it just trains all of us up better. So it's really nice.
Yeah, I'm we're stealing time from you. And actually, you know, people that listen to the show are probably like, oh yeah, Carl and Jason, they're so organized. They must book their guests, you know, months in advance. So we emailed you what, like 3 hours ago, Brian? Like,
yeah.
We need you at this time.
Yeah.
And you're like, no, I can't do it. And then we're like, Brian, you must. And then he's like, oh, okay, fine.
I had to get more approval from my wife than from my boss, actually.
Yeah. So we're stealing your time. So we're appreciative of you and your company for being understanding there. Okay. And then the last one here is actually a video and there's some dogs in my fan club is here as well. So that's why you hear that. But Rise of the Machines on YouTube. So this actually, I didn't realize this, but this is like all people I work with, but this is Josh Holmes. So he used to, I think he used to be like he used to work on the Internet Explorer team and he joined my team. I think like a year and a half ago around that time. And he's been doing some really great work. And he was actually at a conference called Web Summit and he did a presentation on machine learning and he did an awesome job. And what he did was he had some really simple explanation or he really made it simple to understand the concept of machine learning. And then he sort of ramped up and really got into like, here are some examples. Here are, you know, the different types of machine learning, here's how you do it. And he just did a fantastic job overall. So I just want to make sure we get that in the news section because I'd like people to see that. And I don't, you know, he didn't ask me to put that in there or anything. I just happened to notice that he did it and I watched it. And, you know, I know a little bit about machine learning, definitely not an expert by any stretch of the imagination. And I learned a lot from it. I thought it was really good. So I just wanted to give a shout out and make sure that we had a link to that. Okay. That was it for the news. So let's get to Brian. So Brian, yeah. So Carl knew that you were working on this, pattern lab thing. I apparently wasn't paying attention as much as he was. but this looks pretty cool. And I guess you've been working on this for a while. So I really have no idea what this is. So this will be great for me. So do you just want to, you know, give us an explanation of what is pattern lab?
Sure. Yeah, I can start somewhere and we'll see where
start, it goes. Start me from zero.
Sure. Well, I think the first thing to mention is that Pattern Lab itself is the a tool that was envisioned and created mostly by two other super smart individuals, Brad Frost and Dave Olson, who created the very first version. And it's been growing ever since and really I guess I'll get into how I was involved in a little bit, but the gist of Pattern Lab really is that it's not really a framework, more so than it is a place. Or I guess you know, there's so many tools in our toolbox these days, and this is more like the workshop you can go to and play with all of them at once in one cohesive place, and that's super nice. It's not a framework. It's not Bootstrap. It's not Foundation. It doesn't pretend to be. It's more really kind of at its core, kind of a static site generator that allows you to stitch together different components of a web design or web experience and craft them more modularly. So you start with the atomic elements that you might create a site and grow them up from there. The thought process being that if you can get that foundation correct, and you can bring in stakeholders at kind of at all times early in the process, you don't have to have one of those big bang, you know, big reveal moments where you show them that, okay, here's the big Photoshop comp of the site. You know, that you can be building the entire experience modularly, step by step, in the browser, which is key.
I like that analogy with the workshop, because I have a project where I've sort of been thinking of it recently as a place for some related things. Like it doesn't necessarily, you know, there's like sort of an overarching mission, but there's, you know, like other pieces that I want to put in there. So is that kind of a place for this as well? Like if there's these things that you can add in there that are related, is this a place to actually put them?
Yeah, I think it's very. I don't think you can mention Pattern Lab without talking about atomic design. Mm-hmm. Which is really what it was built to kind of harness as a workflow. And atomic design is the design process or mindset that Brad Frost also coined that borrows some analogies from chemistry, where you have atoms and molecules, that make up these larger systems of organisms that we walk and talk. And by doing it piecewise like that, you can make sure that everyone is aligned correctly. So, I've used it myself a number of times to start by creating maybe just a style guide, right? And think about, okay, this is what my typography is. This is what my colors are. These are all just the HTML elements that I care about. Making sure that they have some kind of cohesive styling. But then where the magic happens is kind of marrying that with a templating engine such as Mustache or something, and just using the inherent ability of Mustache or any templating engine really to include partials. So you can build up increasingly more complex things from your smaller things, really. It creates this really nice kind of dry experience where, you don't have to be copy-pasting a bunch of different variants of something. You can use all this kind of syntactic sugar or these extensions that Pattern Lab is around those core templating languages to really marry the technology with the process. There's a lot of things that come into it too. On top of just the core kind of piecing together of things, Pattern Lab also ships with at least the Node version has Browser Sync enabled in it. And if you guys aren't familiar with Browser Sync, you need to be. It's so cool. It basically stands up a web server for you and makes it publicly and privately available to whoever's on your network. And then anyone who connects to that web server will synchronize any kind of page navigation you do, any scrolling you do, form input, and all that stuff. So especially when you start thinking about web design or web application design, if you want to make sure that you're delivering, number one, a responsive experience or a cross-browser experience, you can spin this up really easily, and you can hook everything up to it. And we did this we used this a little bit on the Roydan.com redesign, the Browser Sync, and you could see it in Chrome, Firefox, IE, anyone's mobile devices in the office, real time as I'm coding it. So.
That's very cool. That also lets you, like, if you change the code, and you hit save, does that update the browser then too?
Yep. Okay. It comes with that too. So
I thought that was the same mechanism.
Yeah. Any kind of that used to be more like Live Reload was the big one, and now Browser Sync kind of brings it all together into one nice package and a UI on top of it. So yeah, Pattern Lab ships with Browser Sync now, and on top of the kind of the Chrome front end that it has itself, that allows you to look at the source code of patterns and see the lineage of how a bigger complex pattern is actually composed of smaller ones. So it really just helps you kind of manage all that that complexity as a project grows.
So how did you get involved with Pattern Lab, and what's your role now?
Sure, good question. Or maybe not as an exciting question as I think.
he's the VIP, Carl.
I started looking into Pattern Lab kind of on the tail end of the beginning of the style guide kind of explosion that happened a couple years ago with the BBC and Starbucks and others kind of making public their style guides. And I'd went to an event apart that a company had sent me to, and there was another kind of style Pattern Lab-esque tool there called Pairs that I started to try to emulate and write my own version of it using some ugly knockout and iframes and stuff like that. But I eventually found Pattern Lab PHP and hacked around on that for a bit and that's where I became exposed to Brad and Dave working on that, and eventually proposed the Node port. I met Dave a couple months ago at a conference, and he said, yeah, I was fully expecting someone to create a JavaScript or a Node port like almost immediately. So I guess I was the lucky one to do that. And what's really nice is that there's just been this like super awesome sustaining growth of people also interested in the Node port. And that truly really helps fuel my desire to keep working on it. So it's, it's been about 2 years now since I started, and it's finally reached some kind of feature parity to what the PHP version that I was originally exposed to. And even now, ongoing, I'm getting a bunch of notifications even today of other people working on implementing like pattern engine support in Pattern Lab Node. So people would be able to use not just Mustache, but Handlebars or Twig or anything that kind of adheres to some kind of API. So there's really some cool things coming, and it's nice to see the community kind of rallying around it.
Is it more geared toward like a blog type of scenario, or just a plain website?
No, here's a good way to think about it, I guess. There's some pretty big sites that are actually using it.
Okay. Yeah, that's actually, examples would probably be the best gauge.
Sure. Entertainment Weekly. TechCrunch.
Yeah.
And have you heard of them?
He just drops the mic and hangs up the Skype call.
Radio Free Europe, the team that built that used Pattern Lab, and albeit these were all the PHP version, but very recently I learned from one of my contributors that Target.com, the team making their mobile site, is using Pattern Lab Node to build things. So really, it's not so much blog oriented versus any other kind of content or marketing site. It's more of a vehicle to build things in a component driven fashion. So if you want to focus as a team on the login experience, you can. You can take, maybe your basic styling for your branding and, what text boxes and buttons look like, and very easily build a slightly larger component, whatever you want to call it, a molecule, an organism, whatever, that is a login form, right? And make sure that that adheres to the same kind of visual styling of all the other components around it. And what the Pattern Lab front end or website gives you is a way to see all of that kind of together. So you don't have to have them all separated out amongst a bunch of separate files. You can put it all together. My GitHub has an example of how I've used Pattern Lab Node to build my my personal site, and there are little components in there that kind of all get exported and exposed into a Jekyll engine automatically. Okay. So I've actually hooked it up, and I blogged about it on my site where I actually do kind of like style guide. Driven development is kind of the term that people use, where you actually make changes in the style guide first or inside Pattern Lab and make sure that there's that design consistency and that that modularity and that you want, and then it exports directly into the Jekyll includes that actually comprise the site. There's a super cool article by I think his name is Ian Feather from Lonely Planet that talks about operationalizing their style guide in a very similar fashion, where their style guide actually delivers all the patterns that they use for their production site. Super cool stuff.
Okay, so is that maybe kind of a concise way of saying it? Operationalizing your style guide? I mean, I like that phrase.
Yeah, maybe. It does more than that too, though.
So it's just one part of it.
That's more one of the more advanced features. But what's nice too is that using Pattern Lab, especially with Browser Sync or even just the front end itself, it exposes the whole thing, the whole design system, to every stakeholder that needs to see it. So you can be working, you can show it to your boss, you can share it with your designers, and make sure that things are consistent across the board, or diving into individual components. And it might feel a little goofy doing it as a one-man team. But it also helps you kind of force that perspective into, I'm not going to crack open the editor and just build the whole thing in one big spaghetti code. I'm actually going to think about, how do I want my related content block to feel versus my list of posts to feel. And you can build all that stuff kind of, together.
Okay.
But separate, maybe.
Okay. Carl, I got to interrupt this for just a second, and I want to talk about Infragistics.
Yeah, if you comment on Facebook, on Twitter, on our website, you have a chance to win the ultimate license from Infragistics. And this is pretty cool because it covers a lot of stuff. They have controls for Android, iOS, Windows Phone, Windows 8, ASP.NET, MVC, WPF, jQuery HTML5, just tons of stuff. And they even have stuff for Xamarin Forms. So if you're trying to hit all three major mobile platforms with one, they got controls to help you out there. If you need tabular stuff with their grids, they got really cool controls to help make that look just really sharp. Charting, gauges, barcodes, it's all pretty simple using their controls. And if you just have some simple prototyping needs, they have a product called Indigo Studio too. It lets you get that prototype done so you can show this to the stakeholders and, you know, sell your ideas.
Yeah, what I love about that, you can just send them a link and they can actually navigate through the app. But like you mentioned earlier, all of these controls across all these different platforms, this is great. I mean, most people don't just develop one type of app now. So being able to go and use these controls in every type of app, all under one ultimate license, is really big plus.
If we don't select you each week, you could try again next week. And if you can't wait, they have free demos. So you can try it out for a month, download the demos, and try it today.
Yeah, check it out at infragistics.com. They're a free trial, so you have nothing to lose. And remember, each week, if we pick your comment on the show, you get the ultimate edition for free, which includes everything. We thank them for their support of the MS Dev Show.
As I've listened to you so far, you brought up a lot of key terms that I think that might, you know, help if we kind of give a definition for. Uh-huh. And the ones in particular, like if you go to patternlab.io, they're all at the top there. So I think if you describe some of these, I think that it really helps explain what Pattern Lab can give us.
Yeah, because I think I heard you say like molecules and organisms and before.
yeah, and it does to this day still kind of trip up people who might want to internalize some of that vocabulary. But the way I really truly think about it, and I'll get into the answering your question in a little bit, is just increasing complexity or a structure, right? So if we talk about atoms, those are truly, you know, at the atomic level. I guess there's quarks and things like that. They're really the basic tags, the HTML tags that, you know, we know and love and learned in school. So a button tag, an anchor tag, your headings, right? Those are your atoms. Those are the things that ultimately make up your site, but they don't exist in a vacuum, right? If you're creating a search form, you know, that has a label, that has an input, it might have a button on it, and all those things combine into a molecule, right? A group of elements that function together as a unit. And if you get enough of those things together, enough molecules, you can eventually create an organism, such as having a header or a masthead on your site that contains a navigation, contains a search form, and then contains, you know, a list of posts, and all those things kind of glue together to create an organism. And you can think of it in that way. Once you get enough of those kind of organisms, and you can really have as many different as many levels as you want. If you don't feel like you need to do all this, you don't have to.
It's sort of you can go freeform within this.
Yeah, Pattern Lab is totally agnostic of this structure, but it supports it. It's kind of built in concert with the evolution of atomic design. So it definitely helps in the management of that kind of hierarchical structuring of different components, but you don't have to necessarily do that. I guess something we haven't talked a lot about is, you know, once you glue together enough organisms, you might get a whole page template, right? As you might think of like a modern PHP template or a Razor template that you're working with. We're like, okay, this is the post template. This is the product template. What's nice about Pattern Lab is once you have that, you can very easily insert live data into those templates in the form of pages just by adding another JSON file. This all hinges on the internal structure of templating languages in general, right? You know, they take a snippet of HTML or a snippet of, you know, pseudo HTML looking things, and you inject data into them, right? So that's what Pattern Lab does and supports is you build these big things up, but then you can just send it one big JSON file and very easily make variants or a number of pages based on that kind of information.
That's really cool. So would this work also with a dynamic site then as well?
Theoretically, yes.
Okay. So, like, when do you end up marrying the the front end with your back end content, or is it like, how does that end up working? Can you, can you like send a piece of JSON from the server and marry those things together? Or is that just a bad idea?
See, no, that's the kind of the final frontier. I've been kicking around with that idea too, because that's where you get into what you said before, operationalizing the, you know, the style guide and the template, right? Where, you can ask your style guide, you know, maybe via REST or something. Hey, you know, give me the post template. Right, whatever the current version of that is, and then just you know, retrieve the data from the database, and then render them together either on the client or server, and send it.
Yeah, you and I had talked about that years ago. I remember talking about, you know, having a lightweight, and this isn't, you know, really a new concept, but having an API server essentially as your back end, and then you have, you know, sort of a strict, like you said, operationalized style guide on the front end, and then you marry those things together.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly what I mentioned with Lonely Planet. And their tool or their style guide is called Rizzo, R-I-Z-Z-O. Definitely worth checking out. And there's an article about doing just that, really. And it is super cool. So right now, Pattern Lab Node supports just exporting the finished, I guess, all glued together templates. Mm-hmm. But you know, with a plugin or something that should be on our roadmap, it would be nice if you could actually ask it to, you know, retrieve a particular file, and you can do something else with it later.
Cool. So, you know, you had mentioned that you're working on the Node version, and there was originally a PHP version. So, like, how do you keep those things in sync? So, you know, is there perfect feature parity? Is yours sort of a fork that can you know, go on its own way? How does that work?
Yeah, it's a good question. Dave Olson, when it became apparent that the Pattern Lab Node fork was maturing, he helped out a lot by actually writing a spec for, you know, what a Pattern Lab-esque tool or engine really is. And that's where he documented a lot of the features, in addition to the Pattern Lab IO site that Carl mentioned before, has a pretty full-fledged documentation side of it too. And the Node version has endeavored to achieve feature parity from the onset. Now, there's a lot of things that, you know, PHP does inherently better than Node, and vice versa. It being on the Node platform is super nice because we have NPM that we can use. We have things like Browser Sync, which I use, you know, pretty heavily to support some of the features that Dave has written directly in PHP, like the page following, like the reloading and navigation syncing. That just comes free because we're able to, you know, lean on the ecosystem that the JavaScript already has. So that's nice, but really the PHP version has already he hasn't been doing nothing in the amount of time I've been trying to go towards this. So he already has a pretty robust plugin system and full support for pattern engine, different pattern engines, and has done a lot of that in the PHP side. So that's really where Pattern Lab Node is going to be going into the future, is heading towards that 2.0, I guess, mark being even more robust and you know, unit testable and all that stuff. I think about you a lot, actually, as I write. For a long time, there haven't been any unit tests for Pattern Lab Node. And maybe in the last year or so, I've started to do more of those just for sanity's sake as regressions occur. And I don't want to use just like the shipped example patterns as the test bed. You know, that's not good. Mm-hmm. And it's definitely been paying dividends as more people have become involved in the project. They're adding unit tests, or they're breaking them and then fixing them, which is great. And you know, I guess it's a testament to some sort of I don't know, development that you know, people can actually read it and consume it and contribute back.
Yeah, in Node, and I think I've talked about this line before, but JavaScript in general is so flexible that it makes it so that it's powerful what you can do with unit testing. In C#, it was always a bit unnatural to do certain types of tests, but JavaScript lets you, well, JavaScript is extremely unnatural, but it's sort of naturally unnatural.
Yeah, so
it's like okay to be unnatural in JavaScript.
I definitely have a little bit of imposter syndrome in thinking that you know, it's not good enough, but mm-hmm. one of the nice things about just open source in general, I guess, is that it's out there and there are people actively improving it and linting it if I miss something or whatever. So especially as the project matured and I find out people and teams and agencies are actually using it, I owed it to them to really add more unit tests for it. And you're right, it's so easy to fake stuff.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, since it is out there open source and you have more and more people using it, if they find anything that's wrong, they should get in there and fix it. Fix it and write a unit test. I mean, it doesn't have to just all fall on your shoulders either. I mean, and because I on the podcast, I keep pushing people to do that. If you see something wrong on the internet and it's something that's editable or fixable, then fix it. You know, there's really no excuse. Like you can't just complain or just, you know, the worst thing to do is complain and then just not even say anything.
Yeah. There's been some really, really awesome work done that there's no way I can claim having the bandwidth to do in the project. And it's really impossibly humbling to think that people care enough to, you know, pick it up where I have it and make it better. It really is cool.
Yeah, I had somebody send me a massive pull request on one of my GitHub repositories recently. And I just right away, I'm just like, okay, I'm going to make you a co-owner on this repository because you obviously care about it at least as much as I do.
Yeah.
That was really cool.
So speaking of things that you care about, Brian, I know that you've always been huge on responsive design and making websites that are accessible. Uh-huh. How does Pattern Lab, you know, allow us to do that?
Sure. Really, I guess what's nice about Pattern Lab is that it lets you create whatever you want. It doesn't make that decision for you. The demo that's on the site on Pattern Lab, it's at demo.patternlab.io. That's a version of the PHP version from a bit ago. That's really what Pattern Lab Node has kind of achieved feature parity with now. It has a grid, right, as an example, but by no means did Brad or Dave ever intend anyone to use this as the jumping point for a project. So, you know, I've seen people, you know, just throw Bootstrap directly in here and start building Bootstrap style sites using Pattern Lab. Really, it doesn't make those kinds of decisions for you. It's more of a harness around the tooling that you have. So you can have whatever kind of JavaScript libraries you want, what kind of jQuery plugins or different image assets or CSS frameworks you want to put into here. You most certainly can. You know, it's all namespaced and kind of protected around the Pattern Lab front end to support all that kind of stuff. So, and good question, kind of non-answer maybe.
So basically, essentially, I can bring my own. I can lean on something, a third-party tool like Bootstrap, like you said, or I could even just steal the one that they're using for the website here if I'm really, you know, wanted to take that route.
You really could. I would be lying to say if I haven't used the grid that chips with it. It's just a really simple float-based grid, percent grid, but we get a lot of pull requests, or we have in the past, for people trying to update the shipped example kind of, you know, code and front end stuff, but that's really not the point. You know, we don't want it to turn into this framework that you want to consume.
Yeah. This is what the entire internet should look like.
Yeah. So, we usually gently, deny some of those things where, you know, they want to update, you know, jQuery from version 1.3 to 2, whatever. You know, it doesn't matter. The point is that, you know, you can use this to really make whatever you want.
Very cool. So if I'm building a custom site, how do I get started with this? So I'm just starting day one. I'm like, I'm going to use this framework. Well, first I'm going to call you up, and what are you going to say to me?
Well, on the GitHub page for Pattern Lab Node, it does have some basic requirements, like making sure you have Node installed, which comes with NPM. And then there's two different ways you can get it from GitHub. You can download the zip directly of the latest release, and then, you know, initialize your project with I think your NPM install. Okay. Or you can get it directly from the NPM registry itself, from the command line. And both of those options are totally okay. And currently, you know, they'll spin up the whole site for you, get all the dependencies you want, and show you, I guess, with some of those shipped example atoms and molecules and organisms, how you can use a Pattern Lab, you know, to build things. One thing I do want to do is you know, now take maybe a break or focus a little bit more on writing how to use Pattern Lab to get started, to use it in more advanced scenarios and help people kind of along that journey. Because clearly I wasn't privy to some like the Entertainment Weekly or the TechCrunch work, but you know, if they can build a site of that kind of complexity, you know, it can probably do a lot. So letting people understand those capabilities is key to adoption and hopefully making their workflows a little better.
Okay. And then what about Markdown? I know it's a weird question, but am I able to use Markdown to actually write my content? Or is that sort of a weird question?
It's very strangely specific.
but, I love Markdown and I want to use it for everything.
That's okay. We're Markdown fans too, pretty much everywhere. And I think I've seen some rumblings about that maybe on the PHP side. And it sounds like a great idea for an engine on the Pattern Lab node side. I'm with you 100%. I'd love to be able to use that too.
Yeah. So right now, I mean, obviously if I'm using some kind of server site or if I'm building a static site, I mean, it's already going to handle that processing for me. So there's really nothing specific today for Markdown support.
No, not right now.
Okay. So it's compatible, just not there.
Sure.
Okay.
All right. Anything else you want to tell us about Pattern Lab or anything else that we missed?
Oh, geez. I don't know. I guess I just want to, you know, I want to thank you guys for letting me on the show today. And I just want to reiterate how nice it is to hear other stories of people using the tool. It validates, you know, a lot of the nights that you spend on it and when you could be sleeping. And so hearing things like Target, you know, using it and some of the other bigger examples from the PHP side, it really is cool. And, you know, in a world of a lot of choice on tooling, you know, it's nice to know that the amount of time you're spending on just one of them is actually value added for other people. It might be kind of a good segue back to what you're saying about working for your industry or serving your industry. You know, it's I've benefited so much from it in learning and consuming tools that we use every day on our production sites. Mm-hmm. That you know, this is one little small way that you know, I can give back and make something better. So
yeah, I found no matter how crazy any of my side projects are, they always it's just inevitable, and it's always within close proximity. I will work on, let's say I built a fart app. I swear to you, if I built a fart app, next week I would go into work and for whatever reason, some project would come up that uses like the same principles for whatever reason. It is without fail.
Right.
So I've never had any wasted time on a side project from that standpoint.
I've wanted to write down some kind of post or maybe a short talk on things I've learned just, you know, forking or maintaining an open source project, because I've learned a lot about release management and kind of broadcasting your roadmap from doing this than I ever had before. And you know, it's been a very, very good experience learning, and I can't emphasize enough how nice it's been to work with Brad Frost and Dave Olson too, and their support and encouragement and the port was definitely aimed, because there's a lot of people benefiting from it.
Very cool. Okay, so my Azure pick of the week is going to be machine learning. So go back and watch Josh's video that I mentioned before. Carl, what do you have for the app and dev tip of the week?
So I actually combine these two because Windows Live Writer was a very popular tool that was part of the Live Essentials pack, I believe, Jason.
Yep.
And a ton of people use that to actually do blogging. Mm-hmm. And now they've released an open Live Writer, and it's out on GitHub. We'll have the link to that in our show notes. And I don't know exactly who started it, but there's a list of everybody who's helped contribute to it. I know Scott Hanselman's been a huge champion of this and to drive support and to actually make this happen, to get this over the wall. So just a very short synopsis is, you know, so many people like this tool that internally at Microsoft, there was a team of people, including Scott and a few others like Tim Heuer, that had gotten the pieces of it that were possible to be open sourced. So it's not entirely complete. There are a few features missing, but they couldn't open source those pieces.
Yeah.
So it's functional to this point. You can write plugins against it, and they want to bring it back to be as good as, and then better, what Windows Live Writer was in the past.
Cool. People were just begging for this thing. I mean, they would pretty much give anything for this thing. So it was a shame whenever it was sort of end of life. But now that it's open source, it has a second life here.
Well, and another key thing too is because of the popularity of Windows Live Writer, Google for its Blogger system had kept the authentication mechanism, which was a really old version, open just for Windows Live Writer. And because of this, they're actually going to deprecate that support. So what that in favor of OAuth too. So what that means is, in the future, Windows Live Writer won't work if you use Blogger anymore.
Okay. Very cool. I mean, I much, much, much prefer Markdown. I think, well, there's so many reasons that I'm going to, but I mean, I'm
because reasons.
100% Markdown. I mean, the people that love Windows Live Writer, like there's lots of people that are using for lots of good reasons, and I'm not going to poo poo them, but, you know, like if you can switch to something like Markdown, I think there's so many advantages because, like, it's impossible to write valid HTML. I mean, that's what it always came down to me. You know, it's just absolutely impossible. And if I can write something that is, you know, has to be perfect, or that I should say that can't be imperfect, and then that gets converted into perfect HTML, that's a huge win in my book.
Yeah, so
that's
why I love it. Just for structured content, you know, making sure that it's front and center with your hierarchy of headings and so forth.
Yeah,
we're actually trying to push for using it at Verdant for all of our documentation too. So.
Yep. Yeah, actually, Microsoft uses that for a lot of documentation, and then all that Markdown then is in GitHub. And I, on many of occasions, have found not necessarily typos, but like for example, there was recently what was I setting up? Oh, it was the Power BI custom visuals, and you pull down their repo and you get started with that, and in their installation, they were missing a step, and I had a whole room of people, and you know, I had to sit there and keep telling them, like, oh, well, it's missing the step in the documentation. And I went in and I changed it and issued a pull request. And you don't even have to use you can just do all that in a browser. You can hit the little pencil icon in GitHub and just edit it. And people are probably getting tired of me saying this over and over again, but push that button, make the changes, submit it as a pull request, make the web a better place. Okay, Brian, I don't even know. I mean, it's been like, 30 years since you've been on the podcast, right? did we play this you got to be kidding me game whenever you were on?
No. Before?
Okay, so this is new. Okay, so what I need you to do, I need you to pick a number between 0 and 5.
3.
Okay. I think you're the first person to pick 3 when I say between 0 and 5. I can make everybody say 3 if I say between 1 and 4. They always pick 3. Okay, number 3. Would you rather have to wear shoes 4 sizes too big or have to wear pants 4 sizes too big with no belt? Are you crying?
probably the pants.
The pants?
Yeah, I think you'd be
with no belt.
Slightly more mobile if you, as long as you keep your strides big enough, right?
Yeah, but then you gotta like hold your pants up all day.
That's all right.
But whatever, you're the guest. I'm not going to argue with you. Okay, Carl, pick a number.
I'll pick 4.
4, okay. Would you rather have to use a toilet that is really, really filthy and gross? 2 reallys, just so you know, Carl. Or use one that's clean, but where the water is bubbling in the bottom and you think that it's going to spout up at any time. I think you might have had this one before.
And I think that was on the episode with Ginny Keehee.
Oh, you even remember the episode? He's like, toilet, Ginny, episode 57. that's taking up a brain cell, huh?
But both are bad, but I think you have a known consistency. You can, you know, you could mediate the one that's really dirty and, you know, kind of get around that. Whereas the other one, there's just a chance that there's nothing you can do about it.
Like I could just go nuclear at some point. Yeah. Okay. one more thing, Brian. We actually reached out to you, asking you for some people that would be great to talk about responsive design. I know we talked about it just a tiny, tiny bit today,
but
you had mentioned, Karen McGrain, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. She has a book that came out recently called Going Responsive,
right.
And she's actually going to be coming on the show, very soon.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So thank you for that recommendation. And so we're super excited about that. So that's something to look forward to.
That is crazy cool. Yeah. I figured
you'd think that. Yeah. No, we're super excited. So I've been reading her book, getting up to speed on that. If you had a book, I would have read your book before this episode in the 3 hour time. Okay. So you gave us, like 15 different, plugs. But where can people find you? Where do you want to direct people to?
Oh, geez. I guess the best way to contact me is, on Twitter, B Munzenmeyer, long last name. Hopefully you can give him a link. in addition to that, and, yeah, I'm always kind of sharking around on Pattern Lab Node, clearly. On GitHub. I also have a semi-regularly updated CodePen account. Same B Munzenmeyer username. Hopefully, I don't know if you guys are familiar with CodePen, but it's
No, I'm looking at it right now. Though I think I've seen it before. Yeah,
it's really a really neat tool and kind of mini social network on sharing front end design and development techniques and toys and showcases and things like that. On my on my account, you can see where I did a little joke, little app about naming like something like noun.js, because it seems like every single noun in the English language has a JavaScript framework for it. So I built a little toy inside of CodePen there. So you can find all kinds of cool stuff on CodePen. So I like hanging out on there, and my website, of course, things like that.
Okay, very cool. And where can people find you, Carl?
You can find me at wpdevguy.com or on Twitter at Carl Schweitzer.
You can find me at ytechie.com or on Twitter at twitter.com/ytechie. So, Brian, thank you so much for coming on here at with particularly short notice. We really appreciate you coming on and talking about Pattern Lab. This is cool stuff, and I encourage everybody to check it out. So thanks again for coming on.
You bet. Thank you, guys.